Welcome to the Renovating You
and Me
podcast.
Real talk for the healed life.
We are so excited today.
Why are we excited?
Well, we're excited because we have green tea, blueberry tea. We love our tea. This is something that we do.
It's actually just herbal. I'm sorry.
It's just herbal?
It's just herbal.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. I'm still excited.
You wanted no caffeine.
I'm still excited. Okay. I've got the tea.
All right.
And so that's kind of our comfy spot. We're at our kitchen table is where we do a lot of our conversations just in real life. And an event is happening today that I've wanted to happen for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And that is having Mark DeJesus with us. And he has graciously offered to do two podcasts because he is a world of information. He is a teacher and author. I love this on your bio, the transformational consultant. It's not about information. It's about transformation. Mm-hmm. Podcast host in his own right. A fantastic communicator, and what I added this to your bio, I believe you do a great job putting language to our pain, which is very hard to do. You're able to draw that out. So welcome, Mark DeJesus.
Oh, it's an honor. It's wonderful to be here with you both. I look forward to our conversation. Thank you for what you're sharing, because that's my heart, is try to articulate in a fruitful way what people are struggling with and battling with and empowering way, help them navigate through it. So I look forward to our conversation.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Mm-hmm. First of all, we are going to discuss, you want to do the intro here of the book?
Yeah, a little bit here. The introduction, it was a interesting thing. So we were briefly talked before this. My mom and I and two other people from our organization did a 10-week study over the book. And we were getting towards the first start of the class. I was in the middle of, I'm a teacher, so I'm always frantically trying to grade something. And we were getting towards the time for it to start. And I was thinking, like, okay, I got to read the material, go over a couple times, make sure I'm good. And I said to my mom, Mom, do I need to read the introduction?
And I gave you the look that only a mom can give. And I'm like, yes, the introduction is everything.
Because sometimes I love to pieces the different books, but sometimes introductions can be just like this really, really long, fluffy thing that is like the author patting themselves on the back for 20 pages or something like that. And like, can I just get to the actual content? And literally just reading what the thing was like 7 pages, I was like, oh, wow, I guess, wow. 7 pages, this is the entire book.
In a lot of ways, yeah. You just did a phenomenal job.
The
book we are referring to, which those of us who know us, I've bought multiple copies, handed them out. Here you go. You need this. Don't ask. Just read it. Exposing the Rejection Mindset, Experience Love, Know Who You Are, and Empower Your Relationships. And even that, I mean, just the title of it, the cover, I mean, it's everything. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to just do our best here. We are going to be able to do two podcasts, but as you guys know from listening to us, whether it was the previous hosts that we had on here or whether it's just Alex and myself now as we're kind of continuing to carry the ball into the end zone, if you will, we are very much how we live life, how we talk, even amongst ourselves, is it going deep versus wide?
Yeah.
And so we want to, I mean, I could interview you for a year and there would still be things I couldn't cover because that's just in this one book. It's amazing. And I don't say that just to, you know, give kudos to the author because he's, you know, on my Zoom screen here. It really did so much for me, the person that I went through it with, and to be able to just be authentically real. Mm-hmm. And I told her, I said, if we're going to do this, I said, I need to come as Denise, not a leader of a ministry, not even your friend, really. I need for you to be able to give me permission to just be me and sit here and cry at times and just be open and honest of where I am, not necessarily your assumption of where I am or what my life is, but where I am. So how did you, Mark, begin the writing of this book? Like what was the catalyst?
Well, I made a rule for myself that I'm no longer going to write introductions in books. I'm just going to, in fact, my next book, it's just right in chapter one, and it's called Start Here.
I love it, yeah.
Because I found that to be the pattern. I'm like, wait. And there's a lot, this is my blood is in that introduction.
Yes.
So the catalyst is, going back, really, I was realizing that my internal world was really crumbling and struggling. Mm. I could go into a lot of avenues of what that looked like as far as anxiety, depression, obsessive tendencies that were just really, I didn't have any peace. And I was on church staff of a growing church that kind of had all the markers of everything that was going on. Everything I was involved in was happening and it was growing, and from the outside looked great, but inside I was crumbling. Mm. And there was a number of things that took place in my life where I just began to say, God, I don't know how to do this anymore. Mm. I'm living in this like very, I didn't have this term at the time, a very performance driven, go, go, go. Life just keeps moving and I'm struggling. I don't know who to talk to. I don't know where to go. And the good news is that I positioned myself to say, you know, there's more. There's more to life than what I'm living for. What, and something's going on behind the scenes that I need some help navigating. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't because I was smart or you know, I had a high level IQ. I just was hungry. And mm-hmm. it led me to a number of, God put people in my life, resources, things that just began to turn light bulbs on. And the origin of this book came about, I was working on just rejection issues, like just praying through rejection issues. And my first concept of it was, oh, well, I haven't really like been rejected that much, so I think I'm good. And something dawned on me that was like, no, this isn't like just someone deliberately doing something that overtly looks like rejection. It's mm-hmm. actually more about the absence of what God's love truly is. Mm-hmm. And one day I remember saying, God, I don't know you as a loving father. Like, how did this happen? Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things I've always been about is honest assessment. Like, I'm willing to be honest of where things are at.
Yes.
I appreciate that in other people. They're like, here's the facts, here's where it is. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm here at a growing church. I'm a hot mess. And I don't know how to connect to the love of the Father in my life. And so I realized that rejection was really keeping me from experiencing that. Mm-hmm. And I prayed this prayer. I said, God, if it's in your word and it's there, like, I want it. I don't care if I got to go through like pain, I got to go through whatever. Like, I want it. And I feel like I had a reboot of reading the scriptures with a whole new set of eyes. Mm. And it was like, whoa, that was there all along. It's really interesting how you can read it with like just kind of natural man eyes and just kind of data and like, well, okay, that's nice. But when the eyes of your understanding get illuminated, like Paul said in Ephesians, it's just mm-hmm. like, whoa, you get hit. So I was in the middle of this renovation process. I had some people in my life that were praying with me, working through some areas. But to make a long story short, our church was going through Romans. And I was sitting there and I was just taking notes like a good church boy who's on staff does. I'm taking notes of the weekly messages. And it was a Wednesday night thing. You all grew up in church, you know Wednesday nights.
Yes.
And they changed the format for this. They just wanted to try something different. They did this like church meal where people would come and eat, and then they would do the teaching first, and then they would have a time of worship at the end, right? Not the typical format. But it was like, oh, this is kind of cool. So they kind of had it clocked out. They'd teach for like an hour and have worship. So I'd sit in the back because I'd have to wait for my cue to go up and do worship because I was the worship leader at the time. So I'd sit in the back. I'm taking notes. And we're going through Romans. We're in 5, 6, you know, and I'm just, you know, just navigating it. But I'm in this journey of like, okay, God's working on something. There's stuff going on here that needs help. And he's in like 6 and 7. And I zoned out. You know, like a lot of people in church do, they just never admit it. They zone out. Most of the congregation's not even there. And they just nod and go like this. So I kind of, but I had like a divine zone out. He was somewhere in 7 and I started reading through 8. Mm. And it just like felt like I was reading Romans 8 for the first time. Mm. And I landed on that verse 15 where it said, you've not been given a spirit of bondage again to fear, but you've been given a spirit of adoption by which we cry out, Abba, Father. Mm. And I was like, that's it. That's what I have. I have that. Mm. That's rejection. Mm-hmm. That's what it does. It links up with fear, keeps you in bondage, and doesn't let you taste of this Abba, Father thing. Mm-hmm. You know, you're a Christian doing your life right, but it just keeps hedging that area. And mm-hmm. I'm sitting there going, like, I want to get out of my chair, you know? I'm like, I'm having a revival in the back row, you know? I'm like, okay, God, I see it. So they keep teaching every week, Romans 7, right, leading up. So I'm getting this download of a spirit of adoption thing that's in the book there, the whole Romans 8 thing. I'm taking notes. I got binders or folders and things. I'm just writing. I'm up late at night. God's like healing, right? So the pastor comes up to me one day, and weeks and weeks, weeks later, and he goes, hey, I'm going to be away for a few weeks, and we'd like some of the staff to fill in and do the teaching series we're doing on Romans. I'm like, oh, really? Yeah? Yeah. What do you want me to cover? He goes, let me go see. Hold on a second. Let me check. Romans 8, can you do 14, 15, and 16? I was like, this is wild.
You pull out right? Seven binders. You're like, I'm a little prepared. Maybe. Maybe just a little
bit. So there's this, a whole chain of events took place because I'm like, wow, God, you're doing something. So I teach that night. The room's wrecked. The room's wrecked in a good way. When I use the term wrecked, I mean like people are just emotionally hit. And I'll fast forward to about, my timeline's a little foggy, but I'm going to say about 6 to 8 months later, another time happened. You know, the thing, when you're on staff, sometimes the pastor goes away and he asks you to fill in. And I preached a message on the Father's love. And at the end of it, I just felt led to look at the congregation. I'm like, we're like Assemblies of God, you know, kind of Pentecostal, mm-hmm. Baptocostal kind of, or that kind of arena, right? Like not too Pentecostal, but not really Baptist, right? So they're used to like an altar call at the end. And I just felt this prompting, and I just went with it. I said, I don't want any head bowed. I don't want any eye closed. I want everyone looking at me for a second. So in this, we had multiple services, so there'd be maybe about 300 people at a time. And I'm looking at everyone in the congregation. I want everyone looking at me right now. I want to share the words of a father over your heart. And I just begin to speak those words. I love you. You're a good son. You're a good daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know that I was ready for what was going to happen because there was people in the room where I was like, we need like a separate room. It was like, you know, like mm-hmm. to 10 people too, because it was hitting a nerve. It was hitting a place in people's hearts. So that day and subsequent days, it did a few things. One is it really brought out, like people in the church were coming up to me going, yeah, some of the stuff you're sharing about, I got that too. Can you pray for me and help me? And it's so strange because it was like what I was talking about and the branches I was alluding to about anxiety and relationship struggles and addictions and performance driven, where all I was doing was like touching on those things, and it was going right to the nerve of people's battles. And mm-hmm. it really birthed that. Yeah, I wasn't going to be staying around this church very much longer. Mm-hmm. Like I just knew. Mm-hmm. I was still dating my wife at the time. We were engaged, and we both knew like something is moving in a whole new direction because God had profoundly tapped at areas of my heart. Like once you experience that love, nothing else compares. So you never want to go back. You're not even thinking of going back. Mm-hmm. So that birthed me teaching, and writing came out of it, of just getting to the heart of what people battle. I don't want to, like, let's stop chasing symptoms. Let's get to why we really struggle. Mm-hmm. And the struggle really comes down to a disconnect with love. Like, mm-hmm. like somewhere disconnected to God's love, I don't know how to see myself in love. And out of that, I'm barely surviving with trying to love you, right? So it's like when I began to that journey, the rejection mindset was something that I wanted to help people understand. This is like a lens, because once I saw it, I was like, it affects everything.
Mm-hmm.
It affects if I'm talking to somebody, if I'm in a meeting, if I'm preaching, if I'm praying, if I'm just hanging out. It's there. It's like infecting everything. Do I belong? Do they love me? Am I okay? It's everywhere. And mm-hmm. so some people, they get overwhelmed with that thought. But for me, it was helpful because it's like, okay, God, just work in it all.
Mm-hmm.
And heal and do a healing work everywhere. Mm-hmm. So that became something that out of that people then, when I left that church, one of the things that people really wanted was a lot of one-on-one work. And that's where you talk about like going deep. And we do live in a culture that goes wide and shallow. Mm-hmm. So that's what you know, big numbers, big crowds. So you have to kind of, you got to wrap it up. You know, you got to keep it kind of like And I found, no, this needs like a one-on-one avenue. So I started like people from all around the area were, I'm starting this new ministry, I'm starting from scratch. And people were like, hey, I heard you meet with people and you help them, you know, and it was, so that birthed some of my one-on-one stuff. And over again, I just saw this thing of like rejection in people's lives, whether mm-hmm. it was actual traumatic rejection or just neglect or just experiences where they didn't, you know, feel that embracing love. And so that became, summarizing it to a huge extent, but that became the catalyst of like helping people in this area. And so as I taught it, I was like, well, this should be a book. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's a whole story in itself of how I got into book writing. I can get into that, but that's the origin of it. This is a love message that both my wife and I would know we wouldn't be where we are today if it not for the healing that we experienced there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't imagine where my life would be, and I certainly can't imagine where Alex would be. A little bit of our journey here, because most of the listeners that we have haven't even heard that part of it yet, because we are starting, he and I, in this podcast. Mm-hmm. But he was 17 years old on his spring break, and I said, guess what? We're going to Colorado.
And awesome!
Yeah. And Colorado, really, what Colorado was there was a ministry there called Life Skills International. I don't know if you've heard of it or not. Dr. Paul Hegstrom.
Oh, I know I haven't.
He has passed away, but that's a whole other part of it. But basically, I was hearing, my sister said, I think this is what's going on with Alex, because he just was going more inward, more inward, more inward. Mm-hmm. We had tried counseling. They're like, he's fine. Everything's good. Took him to Christian counselors. He's good. I don't know what you're worried about. I'm like, something is not good. Something is just not right. And as a mom, I'm like, you know what? I made a lot of mistakes out of my own past, but I'm like, I remember standing over his crib saying, I have no idea how to do it, but the cycle's going to break here. Mm-hmm. I don't have an idea, Lord, how to do it, but it's going to break here. And so with that, we went to this, it was a week long, basically therapy, watching a lot of videos, talking mm-hmm. with one of his counselors there. And it was maybe a day into it, and I thought to myself, okay, he needs this, but his mom needs this maybe even more than he does. Mm. And wow. It was just, I know it was all God. Back then, the program for us to go was like $6,000 for a single mom. That was, you know, over a decade ago. And as you know, maybe you're not this way, but most parents are like, I never would have invested $6,000 in my own healing journey. But I'll invest it in my child.
Wow.
Because you really, I mean, we're almost like conditioned where we want more for them than we do for ourselves. And God very clearly in my spirit spoke to me. He said, Denise, Alex may matter more to you than you matter to yourself. But to me, you matter just as much as Alex. Mm-hmm. And so when this gentleman started saying that there are no messed up adults, there are childhood wounds that haven't healed. Mm-hmm. And that gave me hope. And when he also said, if you are teachable, anything is fixable. Mm-hmm. If you are teachable. And I was like a sponge. And that is kind of what transpired. He basically talked about five wounds that we will experience mainly as kids that can halt our emotional maturity. There's a lot of neuroscience that goes into, which I'm sure you're aware of. And they were physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, incest, and rejection. And he said, whether people realize it or not, they're all horrible. They're all abusive. They're all do such damage. But one of the worst ones is rejection.
And that's weird, because on the surface, rejection doesn't sound as horrific as the other ones. Like somebody says, I was sexually abused as a child. You're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's horrific. Like the injustice thing goes up in it. Someone says, I was rejected a lot growing up. We're kind of like, okay, have a cookie. I don't know what you want from me or something like that.
It
sounds like such a non-issue. Mm-hmm. But I guess we've talked some on here. Why is rejection such a huge issue? Why is it marked that this is like, it beats out so many other things?
I think the reason it's so negatively impacting, but yet difficult to detect how it impacts us is because it's really about what didn't happen and the absence of what we needed. That is really the key, because when I, like in all my years of work, my own life and with people, the number one thing that comes to me, number one, it tops the list. I don't feel close to God. Like the honest answer. Okay, here we are, you know, 2,000 years into this, and people are still clawing their way to try to feel close to God, right? And when you read the scriptures, none of what Jesus paid for is that kind of like, you know, what do I got to do, right? It's revealing the wounds in our life. Mm-hmm. And I find the wound of neglect is the most challenging. When someone's been physically abused, they see a mark. They can look at it, mm-hmm. right? You know, some people, you see pictures of people, they got black and blue, right?
Right.
They see, I'm not saying that that's easy.
No.
It's visibly detecting. Mm-hmm. But you have masses of people in the church with severe wounds of neglect, meaning they weren't equipped in the presence of unconditional love, especially understanding love from the Father. So therefore, that open space becomes a vacuum mm-hmm. for all kinds of survival mechanisms. Mm-hmm. So we're living with a wound we don't realize we have.
Yes.
Right? Somebody who was beaten over the head with a baseball bat as a kid, they can go, okay, well, not to belittle that, but okay, something ain't right with that. You know, we shouldn't be hit with a baseball bat, right? Or even sexual abuse and things, even though that takes time to even identify that. But the wound of neglect, and that's what rejection has a lot to it. It certainly tags in with abuse. It tags in with direct things that happen to us. Mm-hmm. But countless times, over and over again, show me somebody who's got a certain problem that seems overwhelming, and I will show you someone who's not been loved in a certain area of their life, and it's screaming. But mm-hmm. they're having a hard time putting their finger on it. Mm-hmm. And so then as compassion workers, we have a role where we're trying to identify. Like, I remember saying to myself, my dad never told me he loved me, but I'm fine. I'm good, right? Mm-hmm. And that worked for for a little while, you know, until the day that I had a guy pray for me, and he prayed the words of a loving father over me. And 10 seconds later, I'm on the floor. Ooh, just, yeah. I didn't even have time to, like, you know, put up the good Christian front. Like, I was like, it hit a deep place.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So then what happens is we're people in cultures that we're used to, like, not being loved properly. Mm-hmm. And it's like we cope to it, survive with it. Mm-hmm. And the church needs to see we're supposed to be a family, but we're operating like an orphanage.
That's good.
Right?
Yep.
People come and go, don't really belong. And when you come in, here's your job. You know, mm-hmm. yeah, I'm not trying to be critical, but it's just, there's that's not exactly the intent. The intent is you're born again into a family. Mm-hmm. And then Jesus does this interesting thing. I don't think we've really understood when he told Nicodemus, you got to be born again. We've taken that and we're like, yep, you're new, new identity, new you, going ahead. Like, wait a second. Why didn't Jesus say, you got to be made new? Why did he say born again? Because Jesus, like, I'm not building on your faulty, goofy parent foundation. We're going to start this over, right?
That's good.
So who in the church has ever been introduced to, like, hey, welcome to the family of God. You accepted the Lord into your heart. Let's start with knowing what love is. It's nowhere in existence, right? Mm-mm. It's like, here's your thing. You do this, participate in this, be a member, this, get involved in this ministry. We're just pushing all their wounds into, like, trying to be better for God and trying to do all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So I had this very big collision when I saw that these wounds I had made me a classic Christian performer and perfectionist. Like poster child level mm-hmm. in every way. It formed my identity. So I had to actually leave. One of the reasons I left, started a new ministry, but I really needed to get out to figure out who I was, because that's all I knew. Mm-hmm. All I knew was to live out of that unloved place. I got to prove myself. I got to like do it just right. All that stuff. Mm-hmm. And all that comes out of just areas where emotionally we've been neglected. There's been that absence. Mm-hmm. And rejection thrives on that, of like, who I am is what I do.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, we live in the United States. I speak to people from other countries. They relate to that as well, too. But it's like our mode of connection is what we do. You know, especially guys. And within 30 seconds, what do? After your name, Alex, what do? Right? And it's like, you know, there's nothing, there's, that's...
Then maybe, how much money do you make doing that as well? How much money do you make with it? And yeah, it definitely is, like, I've read, like, commentary all throughout history. When authors come to America, they always mention, this place is so frantic. People are just, like, everybody is just constantly going... Everybody is always constantly doing something. I believe you kind of said it in here. It's like a war on relational health. Like, it's not like this small issue or anything like that. It's this gigantic, prevalent thing. It kind of almost goes back to, in some ways, the... It was like the old Joyce Meyer thing of the battlefield of the mind. There's a hidden spiritual war happening around you. Well, in some ways, this is almost like the hidden relational war that's happening, and no one is acknowledging it. Everybody is just like, this is just normal. We're an orphanage. Got your papers. We're your new family. Just head on over here. Make sure you take your clothes that you brought with you in a plastic garbage bag. Lug that along with you, all your belongings. You're not able to actually bring the important things with you wherever it is that you go. You're just shambling around. And just hang out here until... Eventually you go to heaven, and then you'll be at your real home, and everything will be okay then. But for now, you know, just kind of come to terms with the fact that you're going to be feel miserable and alone for most of your waking hours. And that's just a normal thing. It's fine. Everything's fine.
That's, yeah, you said in 1 minute what would take me like 20 minutes to say. You summarized it really well. Yeah, I realized that, and these things kind of dawn on you as you're just like being open, humble, teachable. And stuff bubbles to the surface. It was like all healing is relational.
Yes.
Because all brokenness is relational. So I may think, okay, I have this addictive habit, this thing here. No, there's a relational thread that drives that. There's, you know, I'm anxious, or my marriage, or whatever it is in life, the road leads back to something relational, and the road to healing is relational, right? And so I was like, how are we... Now, you have to understand, like, I worked in church, multiple services, had hundreds of volunteers. And there was times where I was like, I don't know anything about these people.
Like, it's fine. I mean,
that
it's
guy
fine.
Could be want to divorce his wife tomorrow. I wouldn't even know. She could be dying of cancer. He could have a porn problem. I wouldn't know a thing, because we're just here just doing our thing, checking in. And I'm like, okay, I just realized for me, I'm like, there's more to this. I've got to slow down, and I've got to start making room for, and I realized back then I didn't have room for relationship. I didn't have room for that, like, people's I don't have time for people's problems, you know, even though everybody has them. So this thing opened up more cans of worms in a good way in my life than anything. Because it even changed how I approached my ministry work at that church. But I eventually moved on. And God bless them. You know, I had great years, great learning there.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
But I was in the middle of just an absolute, like, renovation, like you talk about, of like, wow, in order for me to experience the healing, it's going counter to where typical Christianity is going. But then as I would share, there was a couple times I shared my testimony, like on a smaller level setting, and people were pulling me aside constantly. Hey, you mentioned that anxiety thing. My kid's got anxiety. Can you help me? I got depression. I got this. And I'm like, we're just like addressing these subjects while everyone's battles are in a whole different area.
Exactly. And that's it. I hear you with that. I mean, the roots are where the answers are. And one of the reasons, like in, you know, renovating You and Me, where we talk about going back, is not to camp there. But until you understand your, maybe even your time in the womb, you know, what was the pregnancy like for your mom? You know, what kind of stress was she under? How you were parented? And I'll talk about my situation is that, you know, I came from a two-parent home, but my mom was very controlling. She was a believer, eventually ended up leading us all to the Lord. I have three younger sisters and my dad. My dad was very passive. He was a war hero, which messed him up even more.
Oh, wow.
So incredible neglect. incredible neglect and incredible control all in the name of Jesus. I almost think in some ways it's easier for people to heal who do not have a quote unquote religious home. Mm-hmm. Because there are so many things that are not congruent with the scriptures, yet you think this is normal. And so sometimes you don't even know that your abnormal has become normal.
Yeah.
Until right. you get out in the world. And so for me, I was very, very introverted. I would say I sing, and that's something my sisters and I did. But I would say I can sing in front of thousands. Don't ask me to talk in front of one, because you're going to see me. Mm-hmm. You're going to see how flawed I am, how... Right. I might be 30 years old, but I have the emotional capacity and the social skills of someone who's 12. You yeah. know, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to operate in life. Yet I'm married, or then I had a child, and I'm like, things just started like crashing for me, because it was like, I realized as I've looked back now on my own journey, that part of the damage that was done to me is that I've always kind of put it in a word picture. I like to use word pictures a lot. I feel like I was set on a raft at a certain age with no map, no skills, yet I was supposed to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And in my situation, I ended up leaving college, no food on the table at 22. I came home, left college, and started taking care of the family financially. And my sisters followed suit as well. And that really continued until my parents both passed away in 95. The enabling, we twisted the thing of that's, you know, honor your father and your mother. Just so many things that happened in all of that. And now I have a son, you know, that I'm raising on my own, that I ended up divorcing his dad in the middle, separating. My mom died in March of 95. I separated in May of 95, and my dad died in June of 95. So in like 4 months, my whole world just totally changed.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So it's leaving me angry. I don't understand. I'm making the same choices that my parents did. You know, I'm angry. I'm trying to control of his behaviors. Mm-hmm. I don't know what else to do.
Don't listen to her. Everything was completely fine and stable in our household. No issues for me to find whatsoever. I love in your book, one of the things you mention is it's this rejection cycle.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cycle.
I had very, mm-hmm. And I will talk about this because we, you know, we'll get into even more of this through our podcast down the line. I only knew how to love him if he was doing what I wanted him to do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would pull away emotionally. I was here physically because that's what I got. I need to try and perform. Mm-hmm. And so I was like the model child, but still didn't have connection. And it wasn't really until a couple years ago that I realized I was in an event. It's called an encounter at the church, you know, that I'm from. And I was sitting there thinking, I do not know what it feels like to be a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I was a daughter.
Yep.
My heart has never been parented. Mm-hmm. And that was a few years ago. So I'm like decades of knowing the Lord since I was 11 and doing my best to serve him and trying to search out things. Even back then, first book I read was Changes That Heal by, you know, Henry Cloud and John Townsend. And I'm like, I didn't know you could even change. You can really heal, because no one was talking about it back then.
Right.
It wasn't even talked about.
Yeah.
And so that whole journey, and something that the Lord spoken to me was, Denise, you, when I got into this program and all these things are starting to be challenged, and one of the things that was challenged, I'm going to talk about two things, was my loyalty to my parents. They're good. There's nothing wrong. And I remember sitting in a counselor's office, and she had a chair here. And she said, it's great, Denise, that you were there for your sisters. It's great that you love the Lord. It's great you have a relationship with him. But let me ask you, who met your needs?
Mm-hmm.
And I was literally, by then, 36, 37 years old. And I didn't even realize I didn't even have needs. And I just sat there because I was just for everybody else. And so I got lost in all of it. And then you're trying to parent, you're a wife, and it's like, you're like so highly charged. The adrenaline is running. And I thought this is just how it's going to be. But then I started reading John 10. I'm like, this John 10:10, it's like, this is not the abundant life.
Mm-hmm.
God isn't just talking about heaven someday. This can be healed, but you've got to start doing your work, and healing is work. It is not easy. It is work. And so I don't know if you can talk to any of that. And I realized, too, before I hand this over to you, if I was looking at my parents through, even though I was in my 50s, trying to figure all this out, my loyalty was like a child would be loyal to their parents. I had to really start developing of saying, I'm a grown woman. This is now an adult to adult. When I look back on them, they don't walk on water. I'm not shaming them. I'm simply naming what my journey has been, because if we can't give ourselves permission to name the harm and the hurts that have happened, we are not going to be able to heal. So we stuff it.
So I want to say that I really appreciate your journey as you're sharing it. I really appreciate your willingness to work through these areas like you have. That's amazing. And like, it often takes a certain time in our life for it to be the right season for certain light bulbs, you know, to go on. You know, people say to me, oh, I'm 50 something years old. I'm 60 something years old. Sometimes it just takes, because of what we've been through, to relearn something in a new perspective, in a new way. Mm-hmm. One of the hurdles that I come up against is, well, if I bring that out, I am being disrespectful to my parents. I am, use the word, I actually wrote it down, the kind of a false loyalty to parents. That's a great way of putting it, where we think it's dishonoring. And a lot of it is because we see through the lens of blame, which is the avenue of shame. Shame blames, right? And so because we're broken, but shame is covering our brokenness. So we tend to think of dealing with it as blaming. You did this, it's all your fault, you know, point fingers, and you know, Adam did that. God, it's the woman you gave me. He's just like pointing everywhere, right? But that doesn't heal.
No.
And it's not about blaming. It's about recognition. And it takes time. Like, I had to realize in that moment when that guy prayed for me, it dawned on me. I needed to be told I was loved. And I was surviving without it. And it just took the right moment, right time for a needle to just poke that balloon and it just to burst, right? Because I had a very well orchestrated, you know, armory of blockages to kind of protect myself. We all do in certain ways, right? And so I think that that's a significant part, because we want to renew the generations, right? We want to renew them, but typically what we do is we go, well, you know, I'm not going to do that, and we're just going to do better. But then we either fall right into the same track, or we end up at the other end of the spectrum in some other extreme, right? We're still avoiding ourselves, right? And it's more like facing it, but facing it in compassion, of being compassionate. They're reproducing what they receive. You know, my heart aches for the people, the men in war who came home, and it's like what they saw and what they experienced. There was no trauma term. They barely knew the term shell shock, right? Like that, they were just like, oh, I think that dude shell shocked. That was about it, right? Come home and hey, here's a baby, you know. After you've just seen some of the, you know, greatest brutality, and you know, so what it produced though is massive generational neglect. You know, that took place. And then out of that neglect, unfortunately, also what we see, as psychologists would call, a lot of narcissists formed out of that neglect. Just absolutely emotionally neglected, formed this concoction of traits that are very unhealthy, right? And they're having children, and so these cycles. So it takes someone to say, it stops here, and I'm willing to do the work in both directions. With me, how my parents related to me, and how I relate, right? And I think that's, as I'm listening to you, there's a grace on it. It's beautiful. And you have a podcast. You're having the conversations out of that. My wife and I's podcast came out of our kitchen table conversations. Yes. We just like talking to each other. And we have great, and we walk away going, that was really great. And I love that organic ministry kind of thing, where it's like, we're not just all a bunch of professional Christians, like telling people what to do. We've had enough of that. It's more like, yeah, here's what I've learned. I'm still growing too. But that parent recognition is, you know, if I had 10 minutes with somebody and I was never going to see them again, and I need to give them something very important. Number one is the importance of loving safety and just grace in processing things. That supersedes everything. But two, it's like, tell me, mom and dad, what were they like?
Yes.
Because mm-hmm. they form what they do and don't do forms your thinking more mm-hmm. than we realize.
Yeah. Yes.
Like if you're out looking at a deer and there's a baby deer, right? And a hunter shoots the mother and the baby deer's left. It's probably going to survive. There's instincts built into them. You abandon a baby, it's going to die. Mm-hmm. He or she is going to die. Everything has to be given to us and taught to us.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes emotions.
Yep.
And we're fed. And some of us, you know, have history of not being fed. But the emotional aspect was not understood and not seen.
Yeah.
And so we're coming to recognition now of needs and coming to recognition of, like, those things were really important because that's how I see God.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that goes even more into what the book hits in, because it's like, if you sit down with someone and they go, I'm really mad at God, for example, tell me what you're mad at. What they're going to give me is the blueprint of their father.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right. They haven't connected that yet. Well, because, you know, you didn't step in for me and he didn't. It's just their earthly father blueprint is on their God blueprint. Mm-hmm. Right. And when he doesn't seem to pull through for them or answer the prayers they want, or how could God allow? We do all those spin outs. Are a result of us not being fathered. You know, I include mothering in that, you know, as well too. But it's like not being given those tools then forms us. And now that's why God set parents, they're the introduction to the God voice.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that's why God calls himself a father and has fathers in the earth. It's like to create that frequency.
Mm-hmm.
That's my job with my son and my daughter is that, develop a father relationship that they kind of go, oh, okay, that's somewhat what God is like. Obviously, he's perfect, so mm-hmm. I wanted so this is who will fulfill the longing of your heart. I'm that ramp to help that.
Mm-hmm.
So it took me a while to realize that, and it's in phases.
Yes.
And all growth is in stages, right? It's not like, oh, you're just all fixed. It's always a journey. And there's layers to it.
Mm-hmm.
And the layers bubble up when you're ready.
Yeah.
And I was at that point where I was ready. And when the rejection mindset was revealed to me, I was ready.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like all these games I would play of, you know, dodging.
Are you able, as we are finishing up this podcast, then we're going to go to another one. We're going to hit pause and then keep going. But can you just kind of talk a little bit on the rejection cycle, how you begin starting to maybe break a little bit of that? What do you do?
So, yeah, so that came out as a result of my own life and my own journey and really just taking notes of what was holding me back. When you say the word mindset, it can be helpful for people to understand. It's like a belief system way of thinking.
Mm.
It's not like, oh, the enemy gave me a thought. It's like more like a mindset. In the absence of love, here's what I'm going to start feeding and fueling, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it creates all these limiting patterns I talk about in that. And I just started in my coaching work with people, started walking them through this because I'd see limitation after limitation after mm-hmm. limitation, right? You're just kind of hitting these walls. I found that what it needs is it needs recognition. Mm-hmm. Recognition, basically, I'm believing certain beliefs about myself that they're lies, but I found enough like evidence that I can build a case to my story, creates a story,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's like, you know, Alex talking to me and I'm like, yeah, I just can't catch a break. And I've got a whole story and I got evidence. Yeah, because I met with this person. See, they don't like me either. Mm-hmm. And they got it against me. And that lady over there, she really has it out to get me because I'm looking for evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Once rejection's a filter, I look for ways to prove it.
Yeah.
So I've even seen this in cases where I remember a lady talking about she could go into you walk into a room, for example, there's 100 people there and they're all friendly except one person who says something rude. And you go, see, they don't love me.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
We find that person who we're going to have a problem with. Not all the people who are going to be nice to us. We find that one person. A show I used to watch a lot. It was House. And one of the things with it was, there would always be like this patient comes in with this mystery set of symptoms. What's going on with this person? And like, they're like, okay, what disease does this, 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 and this? And it was always at the end of it, they found out what was wrong, when they were able to name what the actual underlying disease was. They had this huge wall of symptoms, but they only managed to actually get after and figure out what was going on when they actually named what the actual harm was. And we like to say in this is, it's not about blaming. It's about naming.
Yeah.
And it's a Christian thing, so of course it rhymes, because that's always very, very important in any kind of, we need the rhyming thing. It'd be a crime without it, so we got to have the rhyme.
I think recognition is important. Okay, I've got a cycle here of beliefs. Now, people then go, well, I'm not doing things good enough. They go performance. I got to perform better. And a lot of self-help gurus out there like, well, I'm going to help you achieve your goals, and you're going to perform. No. It's not about that. This is what happens when we're not loved properly. This is what happens when we don't experience that love. It forms these survival mechanisms that are built around faulty beliefs that drive our life. We're not even really aware of it. You know, I got to show up. I got to make it happen. Life is on me. All this stuff that then we hit these roadblocks and it brings that out. So I've found this a series of mine. I still use it to this day. It's like, okay, what am I believing? What am I saying? What's my story right now? That's kind of a great way to like hit the ground running. Because all of us have a story we live by. It's got a script. It's got music. It's got a narrator. You know, it's all set. The scene is there. What's it saying? And for a lot of us, it's like, it's this thing that just keeps going. And when we meet someone, they say, how are you doing? What we do is we just hit play on it, right? Mm-hmm. And we play that. Because it's been well rehearsed and we see it over again. So I had to decide when I was breaking more and more layers of this in my life, whose report am I going to believe? I've got to start inviting my father's report of what he believes over my life. Because the nasty thing about rejection is rejection wants to be rejected. It keeps us in dysfunctional relationships. It keeps us with people that are unloving, that they're limiting too. It keeps us in patterns for us to go, see, I'm not loved, right? To validate that. And so I had to realize it's not a blaming thing or I messed up, I'm not doing good enough. It's an absence of love and recognition. I've had to live in this rejection cycle. And so as I'm breaking agreements, now I'm practicing approaching relationships differently. That when I walk into a room and I hear that thought, you're not safe, these people don't like you, you're unlovable, that I'm bringing a new agreement in, that I'm practicing now. It says, no, I'm all right, and I'm practicing my sonship. I belong in him, and I'm figuring it out. And now you hear me, I'm not putting performance pressure. I'm inviting loving graciousness into a new perspective. See, a lot of Christians are like trying to like, they're trying to like pep rally themselves anew, you know,
yes.
I'm a child of God and I, you know, and it's like, you're going to wear yourself out.
That's not allowed. Got to keep going. Everything's fine. Everything's fine.
Rah, rah,
Christian.
I know who I am. And it's like, no, you don't. And that's what you're listening to, right? And it's like it is his love that heals those places. And so there's a lot in that, in the application of, but like, I realized that I kept looking for rejection and I had to start looking for where God's love was. And that changed my focus and changed my journey. So yeah, I could go on and on about limitations, but I think it's recognizing it, lovingly looking at our story and say, okay, I need a new script writer. I need to hire a new, you know, composer of the music because this thing's going down nowhere into that my life is this or whatever. I need a renewed story out of love that shows God's perspective of what he's doing in my life.
Yeah.
That's my quick summary as best I can.
I know. That is so good. Like I said, the breaking all that, guys, was only on page 44.
Yeah.
It was like 200 and some pages. There's so much in this book. But this has been a great part one. We're very excited there's going to be a part two because there's so much more that we kind of have laid out. And we're going to let Mark go how he wants to go, obviously, how the Lord directs. But it has been good. Anything you want to say summarizing, Mark?
I would say that I think for those of you that are listening to this, that are, you know, tying into this, is take your time and patiently allow yourself one step at a time. It's really about learning to be loved. And that's what I'm praying, whether it's in this material or things you guys are sharing, renovation is really about letting that foundation be rooted in his love for us, because it's everything. It's branched out into every area of my life. So stay on that journey, but allow yourself to take it as a journey. This is not a quick fix kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's a journey, not a destination, for sure. Can you tell everyone where they can find you? What are some of the resources that you have? I know you have books, but there's a lot of other classes you can take online, all those things. So fill us in. Give us all the goods.
Yeah, if they can spell my name, markdejesus.com, markdejesus.com. And if they can spell Jesus, they got a head start.
There you go.
But on the website there, I've got, obviously you can get links to Exposing the Rejection Mindset. I have it in paperback, audio, and Kindle. There's also an online course. It's probably one of the more popular courses. It's really chock full. And when I do courses on books, I break them down into small segments mm-hmm. and to try to navigate it that way. But then I also have an online library that people can go. I have this area that I'm working on, and if they see it there, they can click on it, and I created pages that have recommended resources. They can go further into those. Of course, I do a few videos at least a week. I do Q&As. People can send me mm-hmm. questions, all kinds of resources and stuff like that. But all of it is found at markdejesus.com.
Yeah, I watch you a lot on YouTube. One thing I would encourage everyone doing, as you can see, I'm here with two other people. And so it is so much easier. It's so inviting. And healing, obviously, is about relationship. Find yourself a person, a safe person who says, you know what, I want to be on my journey too. You don't have to have all the answers, because no one has all the answers. Mm-hmm. But we have guides that God provides. And sometimes there's just comfort in saying, I'm not the only messed up person. You know, the enemy loves to isolate us and that, say it's just you. You're the issue. Everybody else has it all together. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the blessings that has been with Alex and myself of reparenting. I mean, he talks about that a car ride usually meant therapy, because he's like trapped in the car as a kid or whatever. I'm like,
any conversation in a car, instantly it's now a therapy session, especially if the car is parked. In a garage. Oh my gosh, it's over. It's over. Anything that's going, nothing small is going to happen in that garage.
It is so true, but I've had to be so intentional mm-hmm. because I'm like, I'm trying to take back the ground that the enemy has had. So we're going to go ahead and say, see you later, renovators.
Bye-bye.